The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight on Unsigned, a special Wednesday night edition, we welcome back Brad the Spartan Wood, talking UFC and boxing and much more. Also, I'll cover the NFL, NCAA men's basketball, the top movies at the box office this weekend, and a Black Sabbath reunion. All this and much, much more tonight on Unsigned. Hey, everybody. How's it going out there? This is Ryan. This is Unsigned, our 41st show. Unbelievable, right? Hey, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. This is a special Wednesday night edition. We didn't do our typical show Tuesday night, but have no fear. We will be back next Tuesday night at a regular scheduled time, 9 p.m. Eastern. So definitely join us next week for that. And we're going to have a great music guest for you, Roosevelt Radio. So definitely check out these guys. They're really, really good. Good musicians, up-and-coming artists. You're only going to get that here on Unsigned. But ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, and the people listening around the world, coming to the Unsigned studio this evening, hailing from New York State, Brad the Spartan Wood! Hey, Brad, how's it going, man?
Hey, what's going on? How you doing, Ron?
I'm doing good, man. Hey, thanks for
having me back on the show.
Dude, we're very happy to have you on the show again, and thanks for doing it. I know it's kind of short notice, but hey, thanks for coming on, man. And you were the first person I thought of when I was like, you know what, let's do a special Wednesday night edition since we didn't do our show last night, and let's have someone we haven't done a whole lot of, and that's preview a UFC fight. Before we get to the UFC fight, Brad. Something I know, you being in the state of New York, this kind of hits really close to home. You being an MMA fighter yourself, being in the business for quite some time, the state of New York and the UFC now filing suit against New York, basically saying that, you know, that martial arts events should be legal in the state of New York. What do you think about UFC and the way they've gone about this and how the state of New York has really kept, you know, mixed martial arts out of the state as a whole for the most part?
Huh, that's a great question. First, let me gradually end 41st episode. I just want to take a minute to say it because I'm a big fan. Show is awesome. Show rocks. And yeah, as an MMA, you know, fighter and an enthusiast and in New York State, you know, a proud New York State, you know, a liberal, I got to say it's a little upsetting. You know, it's got everybody, you know, all the spiders up here kind of in uproar, I think, even outside New York, you know, because it's, you know, this dates back so far, you know, I mean, this is something that's been going on for such a long time. And, you know, we've come close to the goal so many times to where, you know, the bills have been passed and we've come up short, you know, this many votes. And then, you know, I guess everybody was shocked once again, you know, when they went ahead and they passed, you know, a different bill instead of legalizing mixed martial arts, you know, and ever since then, it's been kind of a, you know, a downward spiral. And I'd say just from being up here, you have to understand with UFC, when they first started this off, I mean, they held the very first fight in Madison Square Garden. And, you know, if memory serves me correct, that was, you know, I mean, we had, you know, 500, there was 500 plus fans, $30 just to hear Matt Serra and Matt Hughes fighting George Rose St. Pierre. You know, and that was, you know, a very big, you know, culture capital, you know, moment. And it started, I think, the Athletic Commission got their heads turned. And, you know, up here in New York, they pride themselves on boxing. You know, and just to get right to the point about it, overall, I think a lot of it has to do not only with, you know, now that it was just all about economics. Now we have to worry about politics. This is the first time that, you know, mixed martial arts has been brought up to legal standards. Now, you know, and to put a law against it. Well, they never put a law on it in the first place. And the things that they did put laws on kind of conflict with what they're trying to do with mixed martial arts now. Because in other amendments that they have, actually, that the athletic commissioners wrote themselves, has been inconsistent with the fact of, you know, what they say about mixed martial arts compared to what they say to everything else, you know, that has to do with physical contact sports. You know, know, and for anybody who's interested, you know, they can go and check out an amendment, chapter 912, you know, all the way back to laws in 1920. It's amendment chapter 912 in 1920, which relating to the regulations of boxing, sparring, and wrestling in relation to establishing protocols for combative sports and authorizing mixed martial arts events in the state, and to amend tax law in relation to the imposition of a tax on the gross recipients of any person holding any professional or amateur boxing, sparring, or wrestling match or exhibition, or professional combative sports match or exhibition, and providing the repeal of such provisions upon an expiration thereof. Now, see, all this people would say was whitewash, because, you know, this is them sitting there stating out that they're putting the same regulations on boxing as they are mixed martial arts, but they're not holding boxing to the same standard.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the problem that we're having.
No, I agree with you. I think I credit UFC. I don't credit UFC a whole lot, but I will credit UFC for this. I mean, they put together and compiled over 105 pages a complaint this past Tuesday to the U.S. District Judge Kimball Wood. Any relation, by the way, to Kimball Wood?
No. Definitely not.
Basically, what the UFC is claiming that there was a law passed somewhere around 1997. That's one of the things that they put in this, that New York State is violating the First Amendment Equal Protection Acts and due process and commerce as well that it associates with the U.S. Constitution. So, I mean, without getting a whole lot of red tape, it's definitely a political. It's definitely about money. And honestly, I would think that, you know, you look at New York City and you look at, you know, where mixed martial arts is now. I mean, on Fox, it's, you know, it's big money. It's bigger than boxing, period. It really is, especially nowadays.
Absolutely.
Boxing is.
Absolutely. I mean, we didn't have any advertising budget, you know. There wasn't an advertising budget for, you know, for UFC. And it was like, you know, when this happened, it was like, you know, they literally went, you know, had a public backing then. This is what kind of started the movement of UFC. I mean, if you really want to break down the brass facts is that, you know, it really, what sparked UFC as an organization from the get-go was the public's reaction to the sport itself when it hit the public view. The UFC actually made one of the most daring, quest to get themselves publicized. And what some people would think was controversially a stupid way to go, which was making the media get involved and showing the media the sport, knowing how people were going to react to what some people like to call brutality and all this and that. But, you know, what it did was it turned around and it sparked an entire organization that is now what you see today.
Yeah, and credit UFC for evolving. I mean, I remember when, you know, it was only legal in one state, and that was in Denver, Colorado, way back when this really started taking off.
That's right.
And they've really adapted and molded the sport to where it is right now. And here they are on, you know, Saturday night on Fox. You know, so, I mean, unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, we can even talk about the fight Saturday night. I'm glad it wasn't a pay-per-view fight, but, you know, they went head-to-head against college football in the heart of college football season Saturday night on Fox with a big-time marquee matchup. It didn't necessarily pay off for them because it was a knockout in the first round, but it did get, you know, it's mixed reviews in its first opening, taking on primetime college football, and to pull over 6 million viewers is huge.
Yeah, that's definitely, yes, that's definitely something big, you know.
Now, Brad, we're looking at UFC 139 coming up this Saturday night. An interesting fight card, to say the least, but we'll kind of work our way through it here. You got Ryan Bader versus Jason Brills. These two fighters, I mean, really, these guys are both wrestlers. Very similar styles. I think Bader, in my opinion, I think Bader is just a better wrestler and maybe even a better all-around fighter than Jason Brills is.
I gotta agree with you on that. You know, I do believe that Ryan Bader has the advantage. You know, I mean, the records are pretty much, you know, right on with each other. I mean, Jason has a little more experience in the ring. He's been in the ring more times. You know, I believe he's 18 semi. You know, I believe 18-4. You know, and Ryan Bader's 12-2. So, you know, you got a good matchup right there when it comes down to experience. And you know, Bader has definitely got the advantage when it comes down to, you know, wrestling. But Jason Brills has solid skills. I think it's going to be an exciting fight. I think that, you know, that this is one of those fights that can definitely easily go either way. it's either going to go, you know, it's probably one of those that's going to either go really fast or we're in for a pretty long ride.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is probably going to go the distance. Usually when you have two wrestlers, unless somebody gets caught with a move early, it's probably going to go the distance. Another fight, this is a fight that I think could possibly steal the night. I think it really can. You have Stephen Bonner, who I think has the best nickname as the American Psycho, versus Kyle Kingsbury.
Yes, now,
Kingsbury is a very athletic guy and really a true striker in all sense of the word, who has very good hand speed. But Bonner, he's about as tough as they come, man. I think Kingsbury should win this fight, in my eyes. But Bonner, you never know what is going to happen with this guy when he gets in the ring.
Oh, you're absolutely right. You can be right. You know, the American Psycho, Stephen Bonner, man. I mean, ever since Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bonner, who could ever take anything away from that man? You know, we watched that man literally, you know, throw a soul out on the mat many times. And he's fought some of the, you know, top and best competitors, you know, that are in the game. And, you know, yeah, he's got an iron chin. And he's got a lot of experience behind him. You know, he's very well rounded. You know, but I gotta give it to Kingsbury. You know, I gotta say that Kingsbury, you know, he's got, like you said, he has got some of the most explosive hands. He's very dominating. He imposes his will. And you know, when you and a lot of fighters will tell you that if you, you know, the man who imposes his makes you fight his fight. The man who brings the fight to you. You know, that could be dangerous at times, but most men find out that's pretty much what wins you the fight is, you know, making the man fight your fight. And that's what Kingsbury does. Kingsbury makes the man fight his fight.
Yeah, I agree.
That can cause a lot of problems for Stephen Bonner.
Yeah, I agree. I think Bonner's ability to take punishment may actually work in his benefit. I don't know how many hits he necessarily wants to take from Kingsbury, but if he could find a way to be a counterfighter, I don't know, if he could find a way to be a counterfighter and not take the big hit, maybe he can come up with an upset. Hard to tell. That's what, you know, we'll find out Saturday night.
Stephen Bonner likes to exchange. You know, that's the only problem I would have to say with Stephen. Stephen Bonner, you know, he's one of those guys who will get rocked and stand in the middle of the ring with you and throw down. You know, and you know, you can't take nothing away from the guy. He's got the chin to do it, but it's not always the best move. And I'm hoping his trainers are telling him that, you know, and making sure that, you know, they're going to keep him paced on a stand up. You know, maybe try to work the ground game a little bit. You know, because you know, he's got really, actually, you know, a lot of people don't give him enough credit. He's got decent ground game, you know, and I think this is could very well end in submission for Bonner if Bonner could take it to the ground, you know. But if Kingsbury keeps it standing, I think Kingsbury is going to dominate.
Yeah, right on. I agree with you 100% on that. Kingsbury is a pure striker. Now, another fight on the card here for UFC 139 is Faber the California Kid versus Brian Boyles. I really think experience is going to come into play here. Yeah, Brian Boyles, I mean, he doesn't have a lot of fights under his belt, man. But neither Faber, you know, a guy I think who is up and coming, has some experience. I think he might be able to, you know, use his experience or the lack of experience from Brian Boyles to really win this fight.
Absolutely. I think, you know, and I tell you, you know, like I said, you know, and this is, I would never knock any of my brethren out there, regardless if I know him or if I don't, but, not a big Uriah Faber fan. I think that he peaked out real early, and, I used to see a guy that could go, you know, five minute rounds without losing a single breath. And then I see a man who deducts in weight class to get away from the tougher competitor. And, I don't respect that at all. And, I think that, you know, after, you know, continuously, you know, going on his spree of, you know, unsuccessful ventures, let's call them, it's like, you know, I think that he's got a good chance now of, you know, getting himself a win back. You know, but like I said, in this situation, it really depends. You know, where Faber's headed at. You know, is he going to be in the game this time, or, you know, is fatigue? Is, you know, it really comes down to Faber on this one.
Yeah, I think Faber and Bonner, the fight we talked about with Kingsbury. I think Faber and Bonner in similar situations where they've had some bad losses. But also had good wins,
yeah,
too. So I think both of those guys definitely need a signature win, I think, coming up Saturday. Reigns to be seen if they'll necessarily get it. Now, here's a fight coming up here.
Yeah.
You have the Axe Murderer Silva, another great nickname, by the way, versus a fighter, Sean
Randy,
Lee.
My man, Randy. Kung Lee. Yes,
now,
sir. Absolutely. Kung Lee.
Yeah, you know, Kung Lee, you know, Here's another similar situation of the Royals fight where, you know, obviously Silva is world-class experience. The guy's got, you know, over 40 fights under his belt.
Man, Kung Lee, he's 33-11-1.
Yeah, I mean, great record.
The man is 33-11-1.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of fights by UFC standards. How do you see this fight shaping up?
Pain. Lots of pain. I see Kung Lee getting the fight that he probably never wanted. Now, don't get me wrong, I have more respect for Kung Lee. Like, you know, me and you talked about this at an earlier time. I've seen that man literally catapult men over his head like they were nothing. And then I've seen the man also take a beating as well. You know, I mean, in this sport, who really doesn't? But in this situation, all the way to the axe murder, I think that Vanderlei, I think he's going to walk all over him. I think he's going to show him that he's going to welcome him to the sport properly. You know what I mean? Because this to me, Ryan, I think it's a complete mismatch. I mean, you have a man who's 33-11-1 against the man who is 7-1. And I don't care about the age difference, or I don't care about the freshness. I mean, you're talking about experience. Oh, God. In every area and aspect of this fight, the advantage has to go to the axe murderer, man. You know, my prediction, all the way to Vanderlei.
Yeah, you know, I'm leaning that way, too. I mean, I would like to see an upset. I really would. I'd like to see a young up and fighter really get a signature one, because Silva has a lot of fights left in him. But I just think that his overall skill as a fighter and really he's a very patient fighter as well. And I think that's come with time where he, you know, wasn't really in his career. And then you look at him now, he's very patient all around. I mean, there's not many holes in this guy's
fight. That's right. Well, he's fought everybody there is in the game, Ryan. I mean, everyone that there is possibly that's a big name out there, the man is either beaten or he has fought, you know, he's a legend. You know, he is definitely, you know, able to call himself that and be considered that. The man is a legend. He has fought wars inside that ring in the cage. And you know, this is just, you know, yeah, and I agree with you. I am always a man who likes to bet on the underdogs, and I like to see that upset happen. And sometimes I do believe that pillars need to be moved and you know, giants need to be toppled. But in this situation, I got to tell you, man, it's just from a fighter's point of view, I gotta go with the much more, and I mean much, much more experienced man. And especially, like you said, he's much more laid back and relaxed. He was dangerous when he was wild and sporadic.
yeah. I mean, you know, and to go from that as the axe murderer, how he got his moniker, to being a very patient, skilled fighter that he is now, is very dangerous. I wouldn't want to get in a ring with him, I'll tell you that. Now, the main event.
No, sir, absolutely not.
The main event, I think it's really going to be a very good one, and that's Mauricio Shogun Rua against Dan Henderson. Now, these are two guys who are very, very skilled, good experience, and very different fighters, in my opinion. How do you see this coming out as the main event Saturday night?
I think this is going to be an absolute showdown. You know, I mean, I think this is probably going to be one of the best fights I think all of us have yet to see. I think you have two dynamical, phenomenal fighters that are stepping in. I mean, that both have just extraordinary skill. Both have, you know, amazing technicality. Both have amazing teams behind them. They have amazing camps that they train out of. They both have tremendous experience. I think it's just gonna come down to who wants it more, you know. And I think that we're all in for some fireworks. Like, once again, I got to say, it's either gonna end very, very quickly, or we are looking at one hell of a war.
You know, I agree.
Dan Henderson is amazing.
Oh, Henderson is awesome. Shogun Rua is a really great fighter as well. On my notes here, I had the main event and what could be the fight of the year. That's what I have in my notes here. And you know what? If you're a UFC fan, there's a lot of – I mean, we covered not all the fights, but a lot of the marquee fights that you're going to see Saturday night. But Shogun Rua versus Henderson is a – that's going to be a knockdown dragout, and a very well could be the fight of the year for UFC.
For sure. Absolutely. I mean, I put it right up there with ranking up with how excited I am for the Machida Jones fight in 140. I mean, it's the Lesnar, you know, Santos, if that ever happens, you know. And it's definitely one of those that's going to be talked about for a very long time to come, you know. And I'm excited to see it. I'm definitely going to be tuning in.
Yeah, 100% agree with you. And that's our preview of the UFC 139 this Saturday night on pay-per-view only. My name is Ryan, hanging out here on Unsigned with our good buddy Brad the Spartan Wood. Now, Brad, you mentioned Brock Lesnar. Now, he's got a potential fight coming up with a guy who had a wonderful Saturday night on Fox. Tell us your thoughts on that potential matchup.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lordy, Lord. Jimmy Santos, man. Santos, man, oh, goodness gracious. That man is an absolute monster. I mean, I have never, ever in my lifetime seen anyone. Paul Rice came by. You know, Killer Kane is probably one of my all-time favorite fighters when it comes down to pound for pound being one of the toughest men inside that ring in the heavyweight division. You know, Dos Santos, man, wow. You know, I mean, there's really not much you can say except wow. And Brock Lesnar, from the beating that he took from Kane. And trust me, everybody has somebody else's number. Because, you know, Kane could very easily beat Brock up. Brock could come out, and you know, and people will think, well, Brock could just beat, you know, Santos up because everybody has someone's number. But in this case, I'm not going to say that. I personally believe, and I'm going to throw a prediction out there, that I don't care who comes up against, you know, Dos Santos. They're going to go down. You know, the man right now is right up there. I'm going to rank him among, you know, Anderson Silva and the GSPs. He's becoming an untouchable, you know, and that's just how it's going to stay. Brock right now, though, I do believe I've seen on the card that he is going to be fighting someone else now. He's not going to be fighting Santos yet. He's going to be fighting someone different. And then I believe after the winner of that, if he wins that fight and Santos got one, you know, takes his title defense, those two will be seeing each other. So I'm guessing UFC 141 or 142 will be seeing Brock Lesnar and Santos go at it, hopefully.
Whew. Yeah, that would be a good one. That probably would be something they'll probably set up for the first of the year. And I talked to you on the phone earlier today, and I like Lesnar. And I think Lesnar has a ways to go as far as learning the craft in the ring, in my opinion. I think he has all the physical gifts you could possibly want. The guy is a monster. But I think he's got a little ways to go before he becomes as dominant as they build him up to be, and that remains to be seen.
Yeah, so I mean, he's used nothing but brute strength up until now. I mean, I've seen this. He's grown. I give him a lot of credit. He has grown as a fighter. He's grown as a mixed martial artist. But, you know, I think even dating back to his very first fight with Frank Mir, you know, I mean, Paul Reiser got Frank Mir's face for the first, you know, 45 seconds of that fight, and seeing Frank Mir take, you know, some of the most brutal hits I've ever seen given in mixed martial arts, and, you know, by one of the biggest men I've ever seen. And to put him in such, you know, a basic, you know, 101 leg lock, you know, it's like, you know, right there should have, you know, that was a telltale sign of Brock Lesnar. You know, yep. Him having troubles, you know, taking down the natural, well, that was no shock. You know, the natural going longer with him at first than anybody else, no shock, man. That's Randy Couture. You know, that's Captain America. But, yeah, I agree with you. Brock has a very, you know, promising future, you know, and if his technicality improves and he stops using brute strength and he actually, you know, formulates how to use that brute strength that he has and that size that he has, I think he'll definitely be, you know, eventually one day, probably amongst, you know, almost, you know, the legends, man. But up until this point, nah, I think I really do think Santos will crucify him.
Well said. Now, switching gears on you a little bit, Brad, talking boxing. I know you're a big boxing fan, much like I am. Now, also past Saturday night in Las Vegas, we had Manny Pacquiao versus Manuel Marquez, the fight number 3. Yep. Their first two fights at 1-04 and the 1-08 were both wonderful, amazing fights for boxing. Now, this was not an overwhelming win for Manny Pacquiao, to say the least. What are your thoughts on...
No, sir, it wasn't.
Manny Pacquiao.
Oh, Marquez.
Manny Pacquiao, you know, wins the fight. Marquez, you know, made some comments afterwards. But hey, it's hard to beat Manny Pacquiao and the judges. And some people will say he has a claim to that. I mean, one judge had it as a draw, and then it ended up being a split decision. It was a very close fight. Could have gone either way. But that does set up, even though it was an overwhelming victory for Manny Pacquiao, some would think that this really does set up a marquee matchup sometime in spring or summer with Floyd Money Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, man, I tell you, it's really hard. It's really hard. You know, Marquez, he fought an amazing fight. And, you know, I mean, there's this thing called, you know, the – when you have three fights, you know, when you've had your first two fights and you come back for your third fight, you know, you have to go by, you know, this overwhelming act when you win. I mean, it has to be, if I had to put it in political terms, you would have to go by a definitive win, okay? And there has to be a definitive winner, like a definite winner that is declared. And we didn't find that here. We've seen, once again, we had three judges that were Manny Pacquiao, you know, they were fans. And, you know, and unfortunately, this is just how the sport is. And, you know, even, you know, putting this right, like I said, the relation to mixed martial arts, Dana White says it all the time, and he's well quoted when he says it. Never let it go to the judges. Because, you know, when you let it go to the judges, that's what happens. And as unfortunate as it is, and this is where I think it's terrible, because you have Evan Roach here, and I think that, you know, that is the problem. Roach, you know, Pacquiao's trainer, he actually almost omitted that he didn't believe that Pacquiao won this fight. And that, and if your own trainer says that, you know, he thinks that, you know, it was a tough decision. So he thought that Manny, that Pacquiao had beat him really good the last two rounds, that it was dominating, that it was definitive those last two rounds, but only two rounds. You know, so he never really said it. So when your own trainer kind of puts you on the spot and throws you under the bus like that, I mean, and that kind of guy, and I mean, we had fans throwing stuff into the ring. I mean, this almost broke out into, you know, an unfortunate, you know, event that could have happened. You know, I mean, we had some seriously bad, you know, there was some bad vibes going on there, man. being general about it.
I alluded to this a couple of weeks ago on the show about this fight, that, you know, with everything ugly that's happened in boxing, the Floyd Mayweather situation with Diaz a couple of months ago, the situation with Bernard Hopkins in L.A. At the Staples Center last month, and this fight was a fight that really needed to be cut and dry. And I think Freddie Roach, even I think in his heart of hearts thought Manny Pacquiao would knock him out. Between the sixth and eighth round, somewhere in that range. I think that's really what they expected, and it just didn't happen. Marquez came full of fire. I mean, to beat a fighter three times is remarkable in itself. But with that being said, and the case has even been made for Marquez, well, you know, if you want to beat the champion, you gotta really make a case to beat the champion. You can't let it go to the decision card, like you said. And you know what? To an extent, I agree with that. I still think that Pacquiao won the fight in my eyes. It wasn't by much. I'll tell you that. It was not by much. It either could have gone either way.
It was definitely up for debate. You're absolutely right.
You know, and if you say Pacquiao won it as the champion.
I don't know.
I mean, as the champion.
I can't say that. You know, I think he should have put on. I think there should have been a much more stellar win than what he put on. I think that it was too close to call. I think that honestly, I mean, unfortunately, you know, there wasn't going to be a draw. You know, I mean, it wasn't going to happen. It's a trilogy fight, man. You know, I mean, it was an epic event. Well, somebody had to take it. Of course, you know, Manny was the favorite to win. The judges, you know, he had, you know, it's not like, you know, he had them paid. And these were paid judges. They were just fans, you know, and then they have the rights, unfortunately, to be that. And, you know, it's just like I said, this is a sad and unfortunate part of the sport. But just like in any other sport, this is what happens. You know, this is picking and choosing your favorites. And then, you know, that's where your vote gets swayed to. And it doesn't matter if it was 30-29 or 30-29, 29, no. They're always going to go and lean into the favor of their favorite fighter. You know, and you've seen that there that night because, you know, the fans, I think the fans pretty much summed up who won that fight.
Yeah, a lot of people, I've heard this thrown about, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but I've heard this thrown about that maybe Pacquiao may have just tried to just barely win this fight to give Floyd Mayweather confidence. Now, this is obviously a conspiracy theory thought here, just to give Mayweather confidence, like, well, you know what, maybe he's lost it a little bit. Maybe he's not quite as good as I thought he was. Just to get Manny in the ring.
No way. No way. You know as well as I do. We know better. Marquez is one tough son of a bitch. And I'm sorry, there was no way you could fake that. you can't fight Marquez like that.
I agree, and I've heard people on ESPN make that conspiracy theory, and I'm like, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, if it were just with a no guy, no name guy, but I mean, in your third fight against really Manny Pacquiao's rival, that's his Joe Frazier, you know.
Just last week, I had a friend spread a rumor. I'll tell you, in about 2 months, me and Clinton Rampage Jackson are ready to set up and have ourselves a fight. Yeah, I mean, rumors are spread all the time, and they are complete BS. You know what I mean? Yes. And even ESPN, you know, can be evil culprits. The news are probably the most, you know, crooked, you know, suckers out there to get stuff started. And, you know, and ratings is what it's all about. And we are in a business of very, very, you know, tough competitors, you know, and, you know, you got to want it bad in this business, man. And, you know, and this is how you get it. You know, it's tough publicity, and any publicity is good. Whether it's bad, whether it's good, it's good. Because it gets you ratings, it gets you viewers, it gets you watchers. You know, and this right here, and David said it, you know, I mean, and just to get back into the subject real quick, David said that, you know, Freddie Roach, you know, agreed that, you know, that he would consider, you know, going ahead and letting Manny Pacquiao fight him for a fourth time, but they really do, they've been listening to, you know, they want to go after Mayweather, you know, and yeah, they made it very clear, Manny Pacquiao, he wants to fight Mayweather, you know, that's going to be, you know, and Mayweather's camp's been talking about, they want, they're gunning for him, they want Manny Pacquiao really bad, you know, and we both know it's going to happen, and I think it's the build-up to where, why in the world would I want to see Marquez and Pacquiao fight for a fourth time? And so, for whatever reason, Manny Pacquiao is going to beat him again. And then we just miss out on another however many months go by of not seeing an epic, legendary battle to see, A, if Floyd Mayweather is the champion that we all, you know, see him and that he claims himself to be, but he proves it every time he knocks somebody out. But with Manny Pacquiao, we have a man here who is the only possibility right now, I think, in the sport to dethrone Mayweather. Now, if that can happen, damn it, Ryan, we need to let that happen.
Yeah, I've been saying it for months on the show, man. I want to see it. I want to see it. I want to see Manny Mayweather in the ring sometime this spring, summer. I don't care where. I don't care if you got to fight this thing in Germany like they did the heavyweight title this summer. I don't care. Fight it anywhere.
That's what I'm saying. I would go to a park and watch these guys fight out in the middle of a basketball court. I could care less. You know what I mean? Wherever it is, if it's in Vegas, I am buying a first-class ticket, and I'm flying out to see this fight. That is just an epic battle that cannot be missed. You know what I mean? This is something that should have went on a long time ago, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking 2 years in the making. There's hundreds of millions of dollars made for these guys to fight and get in the ring. I think it eventually will happen. The rumors are out there. Sometime in May, maybe later, but I think it's just a matter of working it out and getting these two to agree on terms. Yeah, I mean, it's got to happen. It's
got to happen. Been done sooner than this fight. Yeah. It's like that movie you've been waiting for the last 5 years in the making. We're coming out with this movie, but don't worry, in about 5 years, it will be here. You know, 5 years later.
it's like we're waiting on the Axl Rose solo album, you know? I mean, it's coming. Here it comes.
Yeah.
It's coming out.
It's coming. it's the old check is in the mail. Like, depend on it like the 1st and 15th. You know, this is a hopeful thing, though. You know, but all we're doing is, you know, sit back and just pray, you know, no more. Because every time we get close to this moment, and I'm sure you know this just as well as I do, every time we get close to this moment, something happens, and these two wind up fighting other people.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, it's just like every single time we get this close.
Hopefully this time, and nobody's got anything on their schedule. They both won their fights here late in 2011. You know, there's plenty of time to get something set up for spring. You know, no fighter has an excuse at this point. You get 5-6 months off. You have no excuses. I think they're going to make it happen. Now, Brad, switching gears on you a little bit here. Again, this is Unsigned with Brad the Spartan Wood. I know you said you got a couple fights coming up in February. Tell us about that.
Well, actually, hopefully it'll be switched to January. I'm just waiting on to see who I'm going to be fighting, and I'm also waiting back to hear for Burlington Brawl. I'd like to make to go back there, and hopefully, God willing, I can get matched up with the guy that I fought before, Joshua Monroe, Death Roll MMA. Really good guy, good fighter. We had a premature fight, unfortunately. Me and him have some unfinished business that we got to settle up on, and sure. Hopefully that'll be going down in March, and. God willing, I'm right now in negotiations with Chad from Cage Combat, and we're working out a fight here coming up in January. So you know, really a lot of great things coming. You know, been training really hard with a really great camp right now with a really good set of guys, and just been putting in a lot of work, man, and feeling great. I mean, I'm at my weight class. I'm back up to my normal weight class at 155, and won't be fighting at 145 anymore. Just, you know, was a little underweighted, a little out of gas, but phenomenal recovery, a vicious comeback. I feel bad for whatever guy's going to be standing in front of me, man. You know, I'm a very nice man by nature, but I tell you, I am on a cycle right now to devastate the game. So, I mean, it is just like right on, anybody out there that's listening, I'm taking all invitations at 155. I don't care where it is. Like I said, I'll fly out to Vegas to see you. You know, no love lost. I respect all of you. Just come and bring it.
Right
you
on.
Hey, yeah, that's pretty much all going on with me, buddy.
Hey, man, best of luck to you. And hey, man, we'd love to have you back on, man. Good luck in your fights coming up. I'll probably keep tabs on you, man. I really think you're a great guy. Very, for people who don't know, Brad Wood is a very positive individual. You're a good guy. I always enjoy having you on the show. I enjoy our conversations we've had off air as well. Brad Spartan Wood, ladies and gentlemen, is a class act individual. Pleasure to have you on the show, man. Welcome back anytime.
Hey, Ryan, thank you so much, man. God bless. You have a great night. And this show, man, I will always be a fan. Unsigned is awesome. And thank you also to your co-producers and everybody else at Unsigned Radio. And thanks for having me on. I can't wait to come back and talk to you guys again. And everybody out there, have a great night. God bless. And remember, God is love.
Right on. Everyone, that is Brad the Spartan Wood here on Unsigned, talking UFC, talking boxing. Man with a lot of knowledge, a lot of skill, great individual. Love to have him on the show. We got a lot of things to cover tonight, so don't go anywhere. This is Ryan. It is Unsigned. We're heading into our pig skin. Pick 'em. I tell you what, I didn't have a very good week last week. You know, I said I was going to, you know, try to get up there on the 75 to 80 percentile as far as picking games. I went 8-8 this week, a really wacky week in the NFL. That leaves me at 86-58 on the season. Not too bad by any standards, but what a crazy week it has been in the NFL. We'll start with last Thursday night in San Diego, the Raiders taking on the San Diego Chargers. I don't know what's going on with the Chargers, but the Raiders led by Carson Palmer. I tell you what, Carson Palmer looked pretty good Thursday night. He got a bunch of help in his running game by his running back Michael Bush filling in for the injured Darren McFadden. Another poor showing by Chargers quarterback Phillip Rivers, who leads the NFL with interceptions thrown this season. The Raiders get a big win and stay and hunt for the AFC West. Now my Cleveland Browns hosting the St. Louis Rams. I tell you what, the Browns keep finding ways to lose games. You know, they've been rebuilding since 1999. The Browns defense, credit them again, they've played pretty solid for a very young group. They forced a stop about 4 or 5, 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The punt goes to Josh Cribbs. He ends up fumbling the punt, which allows the St. Louis Rams to kick a field goal to go up by one. The Browns get the ball back, drive the field, decide, you know what, we're not going to try to score a touchdown. We've been kicking field goals all game. We're going to pull out Phil the Automatic Dawson, one of the best kickers in the NFL, to send us home, Phil. Get us a win with about 2 minutes left in the game. A bad snap bounces off the left guard's leg. Kick never has a chance. And at that point, St. Louis takes over and they win. It wasn't a pretty game. Browns fans are very upset, as well they should be. They dropped to 3-6, and I'll tell you what, it doesn't get easier for the Browns. They have 7 games left. 5 of those 7 games, 2 of them are against the Ravens, 2 of them against the Steelers, 1 against the Bengals on the road. And they have to go out to Arizona and play. Not that Arizona is a great team, but traveling out west is always tough for Eastern time zone teams. So Browns 3-6, not looking good. You have the Steelers taking on the Bengals. Who would have thought, really, Amir, this would be a big game with, you know, AFC North implications? Heck, even playoff seeding implications, the Steelers do prevail 24-17 in Cincinnati. Ben Roethlisberger broke his thumb. He's not going to miss any time. They have a bye week this week. Not going to hinder him down the road. You have the New Orleans Saints taking on the Atlanta Falcons. I had the Falcons in this game. By all accounts, they had this game. They come back. They're very tough at home. They come back and force overtime. They stop New Orleans in overtime. They get the ball and decide to go for it on 4th-and-1 on their own 29-yard line. Not a good call. They get stopped. That basically gives the game away. The Saints come and run a play or two and then kick a very, very chip shot field goal for the win and take a hold of that division. The Falcons may look back and go, wow, that's the reason we didn't make the playoffs, is because of that decision right there. The Cowboys hosting the Buffalo Bills. How about them Cowboys? The Buffalo were roaming, and they got Tony Romo, who was unbelievable Sunday. 23 of 26 passing, 3 touchdowns, and the Bills get slaughtered 44-7. The Cowboys have been very solid at home all season, except for that Lions debacle. And they're right there in striking distance for the division to really take a hold of this division. It's really a two-horse race at this point, the Giants and the Cowboys. And they will play one another a couple times as the season goes on. If Dallas can find a way to win some road games, they're going to be okay. In a wild card spot, I think they have a chance, outside chance, maybe wild card or even winning that division. You have the Titans heading out to Carolina, the Panthers coming off a bye week. And they did not look good at all. The Titans get rolling behind Chris Johnson, of all people, who had his best game of the season with 130 yards and a touchdown. Hey, Titans, I don't necessarily think they're necessarily built to win this division, but you never know. Titans win big over the Panthers 30-3. The Broncos, holy Tebow. The kid completed 2 passes in the whole game, and they beat another bad team on the road. Let's face it, Kansas City is not a very good football club. I'm just wondering how long it's going to be before the Denver Broncos change their name to the Denver Tebows. Broncos win 17-10 in KC. Jaguars taking on the Colts. The spew for Andrew will carry on as the Colts again lose and now go 0-10 on the season. Cardinals taking on the Eagles. Eagles are going to win, right? Hosting the Cardinals, they've only won 2 games all year. No, the Eagles blow their 5th fourth-quarter lead this season to the Arizona Cardinals, again, a team who's only won 2 games all year, playing with their backup quarterback on the road in Philadelphia. Eagles fans are wanting blood. Whose blood do they want? They want Andy Reid's blood. The Eagles, the so-called dream team, now 3-6 with a really, really disappointing loss, 21-17, really the most disappointing team other than the Chargers this year in the NFL. Another team I'm very disappointed is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They host the Houston Texans. And I tell you what, the Buccaneers got a big-time Texas butt-kicking, Texas-sized curb stomp, 37-9. The only downside to the Texans at this point is they lose quarterback Matt Schaub in the game. He's going to be out for the season. They hand the keys of the car to Matt Leinart. They have a bye week, and then, well, they do get Andre Johnson back. It remains to be seen if this Texans team can keep rolling. They're 7-3 right now. Can they win with Matt Leinart? That's the big question of the week in the NFL. You have the Redskins heading to Miami to take on the Dolphins this week. It's a party in South Beach, baby. The Dolphins have won 2 games in a row, and the Redskins, who started 3-1, have lost 5 straight. An embarrassing loss in Miami, 20-9. I don't know what is going on in Washington, but whatever it is not an easy fix for Mike Shanahan and company with that football club. Now, the Ravens and the Seahawks. The Ravens travel west. Yikes. I mean, everyone's like, oh, they beat the Steelers last week. They're going to head to Seattle and you know, it's going to be a massacre, right? Ah, no. The Seahawks win at home. The Ravens, I don't know. Hopefully they brought some Seattle's best coffee back to Baltimore with them. They have, I think maybe they're just an overrated team at this point. They play to the level of their competition. They lose to the Seahawks in Seattle 22-17. Lions and Bears. This is a huge, huge matchup. The Bears wanted to make a statement after that ugly loss in Detroit a couple weeks ago, and they do just that with a big-time 37-16 whipping of the Lions. The Lions have some major issues. One, they cannot run the football at all. Matthew Stafford had to throw the ball 63 times this past weekend. I'm sorry, but you need some balance. They have to find a way to run the ball, and they really haven't. Their defense has not played very well either. They can't stop the run, and their secondary is suspect, to say the least. And the Bears are one of the hottest teams in football right now. Very disappointed. The Bills and the Lions started off very hot and have really faded here in the middle part of the season. Remains to be seen how the Lions pull it together in the next couple weeks. They have that big Thanksgiving game in Detroit against the Packers. That should be a good one. You have the Giants and the 49ers. The Giants heading out to San Francisco. I'll tell you what, the stiff run defense of the 49ers, the defense in general, they get Eli Manning to turn the ball over a couple times. You get Eli Manning turns the ball over. The Giants are very beatable, especially without Ahmed Bradshaw. The 49ers get a big-time win in the NFC, 27-20. One of the games of the week, primetime, Sunday Night Football at Foxborough. Well, excuse me, that was not at Foxborough. That is actually at the Meadowlands, the Jets hosting the New England Patriots. And again, the Patriots beat their division rival. And the Jets proved they are not ready. They are not the primetime players we thought they were. The New York Jets get beat again by their division rival, 37-16. The Monday night game. Tell you what, it has not been a good year for Monday night football. There has been some stinker ball games on Monday night. And I guess if you like watching the Packers blow people out, this was the game for you Monday night. Aaron Rodgers was discount double-checking all over the Minnesota Vikings. He pillaged the Vikings. To say he pillaged the Vikings, I guess, would be an understatement. It was 45-7 and a Monday night beatdown by Aaron Rodgers. Unbelievable. That guy is playing lights out. The Packers look very good. Like I said a couple weeks ago, and I'll say again, it's the Green Bay Packers and everybody else in the NFL. They are clearly the best team in football. Now, that leads me to this week's Pigskin Pick'ems. Here we go. We have the Jets playing tomorrow night in Denver against the Denver Tebows. Oh, I'm sorry, it's the Denver Broncos. I think the Jets are going to win this game and should win big. I think it's going to be a very ugly night in Denver. Yeah, you have the Panthers heading to Detroit. This is a big game for Detroit. They've had some bad losses. They're playing a bad Carolina team with Cam Newton, who I think maybe is showing the wear and tear of the NFL season at this point. I think the Lions are going to get a bounce back and win this football game. Maybe they get a running game going because Carolina cannot defend anything. You have the Bills heading to Miami. The Dolphins have won two in a row. Will it be three in a row? I'm going to say no. I think the Buffalo Bills have enough skill set. I think they got humbled last week in Dallas, and I think they bounce back and get a win in Miami. The Raiders heading to Minnesota to take on the Vikings, to Minnesota. Well, the Raiders look to have Darren McFadden back this week. The Vikings coming off a short week on Monday night. They did not look good. Things to Christian Ponder Sunday afternoon is how many hits he will take from an aggressive Raiders front seven. I'm taking Raiders all the way on that one. Cowboys heading to Washington to take on the Redskins. This is a big-time division rival. The Redskins are in a tailspin. I think the Cowboys come out and run the football with DeMarco Murray and jump on the Redskins early. They will fold up shop. I'm taking the Cowboys on the road. Buccaneers heading to the Packers. I'm not sure what's going on with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They have really regressed. I thought they would take a step back this year, not as much as they have. I'm taking the Packers at home against a reeling Tampa Bay team. The Jaguars heading to Cleveland. The Browns versus the Jags. This is going to be an ugly football game. Make no mistake about it. It seems like every week when I pick the Browns game, I say, it's going to be an ugly football game. They may sit back football 20 years. They may sit back football 40 years. The Browns are not a good football team. Pat Shurmur, coach, he showed some fire in his post game, but I think the Browns have not been able to stop the run at all. Even with the new additions to the defensive line, Phil Taylor and Jabal Sheard, they cannot stop the run. Their outside linebackers are just not good enough to contain anybody. And Maurice Jones-Drew is not the running back you're going to get healthy on. They have given up 100-yard rusher after 100-yard rusher after 100-yard rusher week in, week out, and I think Sunday will be no different. I think the Jaguars to win in Cleveland. The Ravens hosting the Bengals. Hey, hopefully they get that Seattle's best coffee brewed and get it brewing early. The Ravens need a wake-up call because if the Bengals win this game, they could easily find themselves in the mix for an NFC North championship with a rookie quarterback. I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Ravens are going to be in a nasty mood at home, and they play very good at home with that defense. I think the Ravens are going to get a big-time win. You have the Seahawks versus the Rams. This is I don't know who will be watching this. I don't even know if the fans of these teams want to watch this game, the Seahawks versus the Rams. These teams have a combined 5 wins total on the season. With that being said, it's in St. Louis. I'm taking the Seahawks. Why not, right? Cardinals, 49ers. Cardinals are not a good football team. The 49ers are a surprise to a lot of people, I think, with their defense and their ability to run the football, regardless if it's Frank Gore or Kendall Hunter, the rookie from Oklahoma State. I think the 49ers continue their winning ways. Tennessee heading to Atlanta. I think the Falcons are going to be in a bad mood. And the Falcons are a really good football team, better than I thought. When they run the ball, Michael Turner, with play-action pass with Matt Ryan, with those receivers, Roddy White and company, I think the Falcons are going to beat the Titans this Sunday in Atlanta. Now you have the Chargers. Their schedule does not do them any favors. They've lost a bunch in a row now, and they get the head to Chicago. This is not a good matchup for San Diego at all. I'm taking the Bears, who are red hot currently in the NFL. And we have the Eagles heading to the Meadowlands to take on the Giants. It wouldn't shock me one bit if the Philadelphia Eagles find a way to win this game or the Giants give it away. But you know what? I'm taking the Giants at home. I think Ahmad Bradshaw is going to be back. And with the ability to run the football, And the Eagles cannot stop anybody when it comes to run, you know, stopping the run or really stopping anybody on defense when it counts. I think the Giants win this football game. Monday night, here's another Monday night stinker for you. The Monday night game is the Kansas City Chiefs taking on the New England Patriots in Foxborough. I think this is not going to be for the faint of heart at all. I think the New England Patriots win this game and win big on another Monday night blowout. That's been your NFL pigskin. Now, we're going to go head off the path tonight, something we've been doing on the show for a while, and this is basically what we talk about, things that are not sports related. So I'm going to lead off tonight with the Gigantor. What's the Gigantor? Some of you may know. For those of you who do not know what the Gigantor is, it is a festival founded in 2005 by the esteemed metal titans Megadeth. It is highly anticipated to return for the first time since 2008 with a multi-artist bill with metal heavyweights Motorhead and Lacuna Coil. Also, all these bands are picked by frontman Dave Mustaine. It will kick off January 26th in Camden, New Jersey, and wrapping up February 28th in Denver, Colorado. The tour will span the U.S. and Canada, including shows January 28th in New York and February 24th in Los Angeles. Tickets are on sale now. They went on sale officially November 4th. So if you want to see Megadeth and Motorhead together, definitely go to thegigantour.com and check out if they're coming to a town near you. Lemmy, the frontman of Motorhead, said, I look forward to performing at this year's Gigantor amongst all the other talented musicians. We've done festivals in Europe with Lacuna Coil, and they're workaholics as well. They're very diverse, and I advise everyone who likes being deaf and that can read lips already to come out and see what stuff that goes on. Oh, thanks, Lemmy. Appreciate that. Turn it up, Lemmy. Other news here in music, Adele is recovering from throat surgery that caused her to cancel the remainder of her 2011 tour. She wrote yesterday on her personal blog, thank you for all the positive thoughts and get well wishes. I'm doing well. In the meantime, super happy, relaxed, and very positive with all. The operation was a success, and I'm chilling out right now. I get to clear. Once I get to clear everything with my doctors, I want to thank everyone who voted for the awards I have recently won as well. Hugely appreciated. Adele looking to get back on tour for her smash hit album 21, who has sold millions and millions and millions of copies. Very good artist. Best wishes to Adele. Hopefully she makes a full recovery from her throat surgery and gets back on the road soon. Now, here's probably one of the biggest news in music in the past week, and that is fairies wear boots, and you got to believe me, right? Black Sabbath. The original members of Black Sabbath are coming together. Ozzy Osbourne, Tony Iommi, Geezer Butler, and Bill Ward announced this Friday that they will tour in 2012, including a headlining set at the Download Festival in June. Now, the major surprise with this, it's also going to include a brand new album produced by Rick Rubin, which is going to be out due sometime next fall. This is huge news. I have known about this. Ozzy Osbourne says, I've known about Rick for many years, Osbourne said. He wanted to do it a long time ago. With the album, the tour due next fall, it is clearly going to be a lengthy process. The quartet has begun rehearsing, Rubin said. It sounds like four guys in Black Sabbath getting together and playing. Butler agreed. It's really back to old school Sabbath sound and style. I'm looking forward to this. There's no better producer to put this together than Rick Rubin. And it's Black Sabbath, their first albums, I think, since 1978. So that's going to be very, very huge. And the tour that follows, if you've never seen Black Sabbath, I've had the privilege of seeing Black Sabbath. It's been some time ago, but I would imagine it's going to be a heck of a show. Ozzy Osbourne is a great entertainer, even at his advanced age. I think that this will breathe new life into Black Sabbath, obviously. And Rick Rubin, I think, will get the best out of it, in my opinion. Also, top movies this week at the box office. Number 10, Real Steel, $1.8 million. Still hanging in the top 10. Very impressive. The movie Footloose, again, proving dancing is a sin. It's also a sin that's still in the top 10, $2.7 million. The movie Paranormal Activity, $3.6 million. The movie In Time, which is a very intriguing film, $4 million. A very Harold and Kumar Christmas. What can I say? It's still in the top 10, $5.9 million. J. Edgar is also in the top five at $11.2 million. I heard some mixed reviews about that film, a Clint Eastwood film that is a little dry and a little slow moving. I'm still interested in seeing that film, though. The movie Tower Heist with Eddie Murphy and Ben Stiller at $12.7 million. Kids film Puss in Boots, $24.7 million. And the movie Jack and Jill, which is Adam Sandler's latest blunder film. I've seen the previews for this, and I'm telling you, I don't see how – I mean, this amazes me. I mean, I know people were seeing the same previews and trailers I'm seeing for movies, and somehow this – monstrosity of a film by Adam Sandler, and I like Adam Sandler, I think he's a funny guy, but this film is cannot be one of his best. I've seen the trailer, it looks awful. Somehow raked in $25 million this weekend. Unbelievable. And the movie Immortals, it looks very good, $32.2 million, and that has been Off the Path and your top movies and more here on Unsigned. My name is Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. A couple of things I want to cover, and that is basketball. What? NBA news? No, I'm sorry. They're still all greedy, owners and players alike. Games have been canceled till December 15th. And I said my piece a couple weeks ago about it. And you know what? I feel bad. And Dick Vitale said it best, talking men's college basketball. Dick Vitale said it best. I don't feel sorry for the millionaires. I don't feel sorry for the billionaires. I don't feel sorry for the players, the coaches, and all the people and the higher-ups with their fancy suits and their lavish lifestyles. I don't feel sorry for any of those people at all. I feel sorry for the little guys, the guys running the vending, the parking lots, the tickets, the people busing and waiting tables at these places. I feel sorry for those people who are losing out. Those are the people who are struggling the most, and now we're even going to lose more. That's who I feel sorry for. I don't feel sorry for the guys that make over $5 million a year. Sorry. Take your crying somewhere else, NBA. But the good news is we have basketball. It's NCAA men's basketball. Take center stage. Hey, who needs the NBA anyway, right? NCAA basketball kicks off this past weekend with the Carrier Classic on Veterans Day with North Carolina taking on Michigan State. The Tar Heels front court led by Harrison Barnes, who whenever the NBA figures it out will be a top five pick in the NBA. There's no doubt about it. North Carolina wins that, and they look like they could be one of the best teams in the country. Last night at the historic Madison Square Garden, for those of you who did not see it, Coach Krzyzewski, better known as Coach K, became the winningest coach in Division I history since 1980. He's won more, since he took over coaching in 1980 at Duke. Since the mid-'80s, he's developed the winning tradition at Duke, winning his 903rd win last night at Madison Square Garden, while his mentor Bobby Knight and also former player Jay Billis, who was part of that 1986 Final Four team, were calling the game. Really a great scene. Over 30 players were in attendance who used to play at Duke, were in attendance last night at Madison Square Garden, with his family on hand, his wife and his children, his grandkids, all at Madison Square Garden, sharing in probably a moment that will – I'm sorry. No one is ever going to win over 903 games. And Coach K in that Duke program, he's probably going to win more upwards to 1,000 before it's all said and done. This is a record that will never be touched. I can honestly say I don't think anybody's ever going to touch it. I really don't. Congratulations to Coach K and the Duke program for building a winner and really keeping the standards high at the university, first and foremost, which, not something that can be really said about a lot of programs in college sports today. Credit Duke University and Coach K winning 903 wins, and that team looks pretty solid. I think they're definitely going to be a handful, as they always are, as we head into the NCAA season. Also, I want to give a shout-out to some mid-major teams beating some major teams in college basketball. Cleveland State beating a ranked Vanderbilt team here on the road in Nashville. Credit Akron for beating LSU in LSU. Credit Kent State for beating West Virginia in the Big East in West Virginia. How about the Ohio mid-majors making an early claim in the NCAA season? You got to like that. A long way to go. I'll tell you what, here's the top 10 as it shakes up right now. I'll give you my synopsis on these top 10 teams and some other teams to definitely keep an eye on. Number 10 is Memphis. I got to see them play a little bit the other day. This team has serious speed. Look out for Memphis. They are going to be tough. Pittsburgh, hey, it's your typical Pittsburgh basketball. They play very good defense, hard-nosed team, very good. Louisville, again, high-pressure team, very, very good. Now, you have Florida. They suffered a very tough loss last night against a very good Ohio State team. But Florida is going to be one of those teams in the SEC. Is going to be definitely a handful for the simple fact that the SEC is not a very good basketball conference. Duke, young team, has a long way to go, but they're going to be very solid down the road. Syracuse, again, a very good team in the Big East. Connecticut team, I tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me if Connecticut wins it again. They are very good and very young, talented, athletic. They'll get up and down the floor. Ohio State, another team. There's only one senior on this Ohio State team and one junior. Everybody else is sophomores and freshmen. Ohio State, a very young team. They looked very good last night. Kentucky, again, another team, very young. A lot of freshmen, you know, four or five freshmen that play on this unit. A couple guys who didn't go NBA coming back. Kentucky is going to be a handful. But North Carolina at number one with Harrison Barnes and company. They play, I think Carolina's got about three or four guys that are going to the NBA on this team. There's no doubt on my mind. Another team to take a look at out of the Big 12, and that is Baylor. They look very good. If Baylor can find a way to find some guard play this year, their guard play was absolutely horrendous last year. They can find a point guard who can take care of the ball. Baylor's going to be okay. They're one of the bigger front courts, a lot of size, a lot of athleticism. They just need someone to grab a hold of that guard, point guard position, and drive the ship because Baylor has serious talent. Other teams to take a look at that you may want to keep an eye on, Michigan, Alabama, and Florida State. Now, Alabama, the simple fact that the SEC is an awful basketball conference, and Florida State with a tenacious defense, very good program they got down there. Look for them to make some noise. Games to look at this week if you're interested in college hoops, Arizona taking on St. John's. That's tomorrow night. Texas A&M versus Mississippi State, Duke versus Davidson, Xavier versus Miami of Ohio. Those are some key matchups you may want to take a look at as we go on. And you know, it will be something we'll be featuring more and more on the show once we get into college basketball and we get into the meat of the season, the Maui Invitational, the ACC Big Ten Classic. We'll cover that as well. So definitely stay tuned here on Unsigned for information about NCAA men's basketball. Now, switching gears, staying with NCAA, and now we're talking the BCS mess that is college football. Well, two more unbeatens fall over this past weekend. Stanford gets throttled by Pac-10 rival the Oregon Ducks by over 20 points. Boise State Broncos lose to TSC at home in the same fashion in which they lost to Nevada last year, and that was a missed field goal costing the Broncos a BCS bid, more than likely. That leaves LSU standing alone, and Oklahoma State is the only unbeatens. I think Oklahoma State has the hardest road overall to haul. They have a big-time matchup against Oklahoma coming up in a few weeks at the end of the season. The SEC talking heads are loving this right now because now they're looking at getting their rematch that they won, Alabama versus LSU. Yay, great. That's just what I want to see. I'll tell you what, this is what I think could happen and very well could happen. You may have LSU, who has to play Arkansas, who's getting their all-star running back this weekend. They play in 2 weeks at the end of the month. It's in LSU, but I tell you what, LSU has always struggled historically against Arkansas. Don't be shocked against a very, very good, underrated Arkansas team if LSU ends up losing that game. And then what do you got? You got another one-loss team, then Oklahoma State loses to Oklahoma. So then you got everybody in the top 10 with one loss, and you got the Georgia Bulldogs playing who knows who in the SEC championship game. So then you have, if that were to happen, here's your top 10. Boise State, one loss. Virginia Tech, one loss. Stanford, one loss. Clemson, one loss. Arkansas, one loss. Oklahoma, one loss. Oregon, one loss. Alabama, one loss. Oklahoma State and LSU potentially all could have one loss. So then what do you do as far as national title at that point? Who has a claim to it if everybody's got one loss? Thus, the issue with the BCS Championship Series. This is not a new topic. It's been talked about quite a bit. I would like to see them come up with some type of formula, either a four-team playoff. Something has to be done. Maybe this is the year that NCAA and the BCS wake up and go, man, we got 10 teams who are all pretty good, all have one loss. What do we do? The mess that is and the controversial topic that is NCAA college football. You know, I got a funny, I like to, be passionate about calling sports and, passionate when we have guests on. But you know what? This guy here in Knoxville takes the cake. Check this out.
Hey, this is Dave on the 159, baby. Coming to you with a very special update on the Knox City Greyhounds, baby, who are now the 2011 Bay District Champions. That's right. It was one heck of a battle. It was one heck of a war on that field last night. We would not be denied. We wasn't denied. We dominated, annihilated, and assassinated, and I'm a liberated, baby. the Cypher Bulldogs. Next week, it's only going to get tougher, boys. We got Walnut Springs, and let's get it on right now. Yeah!
We got Walnut Springs, boys. Let's get it on right now.
I wonder if this guy's like cutting a WWF promo right now as we speak. What you gonna do, brother? Say your prayers, eat your vitamins. What you gonna do, brother? Yeah. But hey, credit that guy for being passionate about his local football. You gotta like that. Hey, I want to thank Brad the Spartan Wood for coming on and doing a phenomenal piece on UFC and boxing for us tonight. Mike, wonderful job as always. Shout out to @CougarCarolyn on Twitter. And also check me out on Twitter, Ryan_unsigned on Twitter as well. Hey, next week, got a great music artist and more sports as well for you. Seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.